This broadcast was originally recorded on December 5th, 2022.
Donald Trump's statement yesterday talking about suspending the Constitution. Can you support a candidate in 2024 who's for suspending the Constitution?
I will support whoever the Republican nominee is.
That's a remarkable statement. You'd support a candidate who's come out for suspending the Constitution?
Well, you know, he says a lot of things.
Yeah, why not? By the way, it wasn't suspending the Constitution. He wanted to kill it entirely. What was the word he used as?
Terminate.
Terminate.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
He's now the Terminator.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am from Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lancaster, Pennsylvania's WLR. RI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets. On the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, and Detour Talk, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. So Trump said he called for terminating the Constitution. And who was that Republican who George Stephanopoulos was talking to, asking if he would go along with Trump on this, Desi Doyen?
That was Representative David Joyce of Ohio, Republican, who's head of the Republican Governance Committee, which is the moderates in Congress.
So the moderates at this point are not sure. Maybe they're fine going ahead with a guy who calls for terminating the Constitution, which, by the way, George Stephanopoulos there from ABC News, just to let him know, he didn't call for suspending it. He wants to terminate it. Anyway, we will get to that in a minute. Just a friendly public service announcement right up front here, given the amount of mis and disinformation out there, some of which I hope to speak about with my guest joining me momentarily on today's program. Respiratory viruses, including flu and COVID, are said to be off the charts right now in California, including here in Los Angeles County. That, according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, as similar surges are said to be happening nationwide. The CDC uses 5 overall levels, from minimal to very high, to measure influenza-like illnesses across the U.S. and its territories. On Friday, the agency's color-coded map showed California and 10 other states, along with New York City, all shaded purple, which is the worst of the 3 shades in the very high flu level. That, according to the CDC's map, published by the LA Times over the weekend. So, you know, I'm here with good news as ever. Since the start of October, CDC officials estimate there have been 78,000 flu hospitalizations and 4,500 deaths nationally. Experts predict that over the next year, we could see as many as 120,000 deaths from respiratory viruses in the U.S. if we stay on our continued trajectory of dropping mask usage and our incredibly low rate of uptake for both the new bivalent COVID vaccine and the flu vaccine, which is seeing less uptake this year, thanks to the years-long effort from both the left and the right at this point to discredit vaccines entirely. In LA County specifically, flu and COVID-19 cases are surging, along with RSV, the respiratory syncytial virus. LA County also remains at a very high level. LA County Public Health Director Barbara Ferrer said in a recent briefing, quote, "This triple threat has a lot of potential to cause significant circulating illness and to strain our healthcare system, both in terms of the number of beds that are available and the number of healthcare workers that are impacted by the illness, which lowers the hospital's capacity to take care of patients." All of which is raising the prospects of re-implementing indoor mask mandates right here in Los Angeles County once again, unless rates can be curbed and or prevented from rising beyond their current levels. Masking and vaccines for both COVID and the flu virus, along with washing your hands, avoiding large indoor gatherings, etc., when possible, remain the best thing that you can do to keep yourself and your family safe through this new winter surge, according to health officials. The flu positivity rate in LA County, for example, has reached 25%, a level not seen at this time of year in the last 4 years, with the LA County Health Director saying, quote, "Clearly, we're off the charts."
Yeah, and just a reminder, COVID remains the third largest cause of death in the United States. So, you know, the basic masking that people have been doing also helps not just you and protect you and your family, but also anyone that you come into contact with, like grocery store clerks and other people who have to work inside.
So it is just one of many news stories, frankly, that have been wildly misreported, as I noted, on both the right and the far left, unfortunately, that we continue to try to correct for with independently verifiable evidence and information that I think you, our listeners, deserve. And speaking of too often wildly misreported news from both the purposely deceptive right and what I describe as the too often duped far left, a number of news agencies around the world today, including AP, are reporting on what Ukrainian authorities described as the latest, quote, massive missile attack from Russia across the country of Ukraine, striking homes and buildings, killing civilians, and disrupting electrical power and water supplies in a continuing campaign that has knocked out both power and water in a number of urban centers across the nation as winter sets in. The good news is that Ukraine's Air Force claims that they have shot down more than 60 of the incoming 70 missiles fired by Russia. Hours earlier, explosions rocked two air bases deep inside of Russia, as Ukraine in recent days has continued to both push back retreating Russian forces and get close enough to the Russian border that their missiles may finally be able to strike actual Russian targets. And the defense ministry in Moscow said that it had shot down two Ukrainian drones attacking the Russian military sites, but that three Russian servicemen were killed by falling debris and four others were wounded. The attacks at the bases in western Russia raised the threat of dangerous escalation in the war in this now more than nine-month-long assault by Russia on its sovereign foreign neighbor. As of airtime, Kyiv had not yet commented on the explosions at the Russian bases, even as Russia has been firing waves of missiles at Ukrainian civilian infrastructure targets in recent weeks, regarded as a war crime by international bodies. Russia is seeking to disable Ukraine's energy supplies and infrastructure as winter approaches, part of the new strategy in its nine-month-long war. AP and PBS Frontline have verified nearly 600 potential war crimes at this point since Russia invaded Ukraine, including direct attacks on civilians and sites protected under international humanitarian law. The groups AP and Frontline provide a detailed database of the evidence at pbs.org. They list, as of today, some 596 documented incidents of potential war crimes in Ukraine, including 209 direct attacks on civilians, 36 attacks where children were killed, and 41 attacks on food and or water facilities. Meanwhile, back here at home, terrorist attacks on electric substations in Moore County, North Carolina, have knocked out power and, in many cases, water supplies to some 45,000 customers in that county. That's about 90 miles east of Charlotte, North Carolina. Two substations appear to have been taken out by weapons fire, with both police and federal officials now probing the matter to determine what was behind this apparent coordinated domestic terrorism attack. As winter sets in, and Duke Energy, which runs the facility, say that power may not be restored there until Thursday. Schools have been canceled and a state of emergency issued in the area. We'll be keeping our eyes on that, of course, as the week progresses. We may have a bit more later on this show with Desi Doyen, and I know we'll have more on tomorrow's Green News Report, I suspect.
Oh, yes. Yes, we will.
Down in Georgia, meanwhile, in the U.S. Senate runoff that we've been following closely between incumbent Democratic Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock and Trump-backed former football pro and extraordinarily accomplished liar Herschel Walker, early in-person voting is now over, and it will all come down to turnout on Tuesday on Election Day after record-breaking early voting numbers over the past week, thanks in part, however, to turnout from many young and minority voters who did not vote during the general election on November 8th, but arguably more so that would be thanks to the compressed time period now for early voting in runoff elections in Georgia due to a bill that its Republican legislature, Republican Secretary of State, Republican governor supported after the 2020 election. And its 2021 U.S. Senate runoffs in Georgia, both won by Democrats. This new law, among other things, has compressed what had been about 17 days of early voting into a maximum of 7 days for this latest runoff. That was just one of the provisions of this controversial SB 202 voter suppression measure adopted by state Republicans, which has led to several lawsuits, one of which filed by the CoalitionForGoodGovernance.org, and by way of full disclosure, I am a named plaintiff against that lawsuit representing media. I discussed that lawsuit in detail with coalition member and co-plaintiff Jean Dufort on last Wednesday's broadcast, if you didn't hear it. She is a longtime Georgia election integrity expert, observer, representing both the Democratic and Libertarian parties at various times on the ground in the Peach State. You can download that program, of course, as always, for free. Thank you to supporters at bradblog.com. And finally, before we get to my guest, though perhaps like much of the above, we'll discuss this with him as well. Late on Friday, formerly reliable progressive journalist Matt Taibbi published a bizarre and lengthy Twitter thread based on documents given to him, apparently by Twitter's new owner, billionaire Elon Musk, said to describe the discussion and debate that went on among executives at the social media network regarding whether to downgrade and prevent wide distribution of a story back in 2020 by Rupert Murdoch's New York Post in the run-up to the 2020 election, purporting to offer emails and nude photos of Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, though billed as a bombshell, at least by Elon Musk, and restricted by certain unexplained, quote, certain conditions referenced as Taibbi described it. He didn't tell us what these certain conditions were, but he said there were certain conditions that he had to agree in order to get this story, I guess, from Twitter and Musk. Anyway, this lengthy thread included about 30 or more tweets, did not include any actual bombshells. As far as I was able to notice, it showed Twitter executives wondering if they were doing the right thing and hoping to avoid a repeat of the false information that was posted to Twitter before the 2016 election based on hacked and stolen emails at that time. And the executives even noted, according to Taibbi, who said, quote, both parties had access to these tools to, you know, prevent information, to shut down certain tweets that they felt were inappropriate for some reason. Both parties, said Taibbi, had access to these tools in the run-up to 2020. Biden had used them, by the way, to ask for the removal of pornographic photos of Hunter Biden, for example. But Taibbi said, quote, for instance, in 2020, requests from both the Trump White House and the Biden campaign were received and honored by Twitter. Oddly enough, Elon Musk described the Biden campaign request to remove porn photos as a violation of the First Amendment. He said, if this isn't a violation of the First Amendment, I don't know what is. Well, apparently he doesn't know what is, because this was not even close to a violation of the First Amendment. The Biden administration, or the Biden campaign, was a private company at the time, private organization at the time. Twitter is a private organization. They can do anything they want. They don't have to mind the First Amendment. But of greater concern, I would argue, Donald Trump issued an insane statement on his own social media network in response to this, which clearly he did not even bother to read. But he charged, quote, with the revelation of massive and widespread fraud and deception. And there was nothing of the sort in this thread. In working closely with big tech companies, the DNC and the Democrat Party, do you throw out the presidential election results of 2020 and declare the rightful winner, or do you have a new election? Clearly, he did not bother to read Matt Taibbi's thread. And in any event, I guess those are the only two choices. You actually throw out the election, or you declare a new one or something. I don't know. But here's the actual troubling part. Trump went on to say, quote, a massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. No, a massive fraud of this type, which is not a fraud, even if it was, does not call for terminating the Constitution. He continued, our great, quote, founders did not want and would not condone false and fraudulent elections. So, again, clearly he did not even read what it is he was talking about. He doesn't care. But the leading candidate for the 2024 presidential election, at least the leading candidate at this time, believes that we should terminate the Constitution. Okay, then.
Totally normal party.
Let's take a quick break here, and we will talk about all of that and much more, I suspect, with my special guest in studio today. And if time, some of your calls, maybe, on that and or anything else that we happen to talk about with Steve Herman. He's joining us in a moment. Our phone number is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Steve is a longtime Asia-based correspondent for Voice of America, that at least until he became the Voice of America's chief White House correspondent during the Donald Trump years and for a few months of Joe Biden, I believe. And now he's already on the 2024 beat, believe it or not, before the 2022 midterms are actually complete. Really? Yep, really. Plenty to chat about with Steve right after this. I'm Brad Friedman, and you're listening to The Bradcast.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast. Talking heads. Are you trying to send me a message, Desi Doyen? Welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Steve Herman is a decades-long veteran journalist, having spent some 26 years or so based in Asia, covering the region, including reporting from Tokyo, and as a Voice of America correspondent and bureau chief in India, Korea, and Thailand. I think I got that right. His travels have taken him to approximately 75 countries, which included on-scene reporting from combat zones, civil uprisings, and areas struck by major natural disasters. He returned stateside a few years ago, first to serve in 2016 as VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent based at the State Department, then as VOA's White House bureau chief. which I'm wondering if that was easier or harder under Donald Trump than serving in combat zones. He also has recently left that gig at the White House to become the U.S.-funded news organization's chief national correspondent, where he is already on the road and in the field covering the 2024 campaign, believe it or not. And we ain't even done with 2022 around here. Oh, Steve Herman, I mentioned at the top of the show that we're having a new surge of the flu and COVID, et cetera, here. So I picked a terrible time to have my first in-studio guest being you. Sorry about that. But welcome back to the broadcast in person.
It is a pleasure to be here in person and, we must admit, still maskless, at least of today.
Well, some of us were. Not all of us. But certainly when we're on the radio, we have no choice. What are we going to do?
You can do a lot on the radio.
I know. But you're the first person in the room with me.
It is a double honor.
So we'll see. Ask me in 5 to 10 days once the virus has time to kick in. Anyway, Steve, we first got to know you on this show a decade ago, I think it was, 2011. That was Fukushima, right? 2011. And it was amid that literal fallout there. You were stationed as the Asian correspondent?
I was Northeast Asia bureau chief.
Okay. And you were one of the first ones, if I recall correctly, you were one of the first ones to actually in the media to actually go into Fukushima after the disaster there, correct?
Well, obviously there were some local reporters who were there, whether they chose to be there
not. Right.
But as far as international media, yes, I was one of the first that was on the ground in Fukushima and one of the first. Along with then LA Times correspondent John Gliona to actually get to the gate of the Fukushima nuclear power plant where the meltdowns were happening.
I'll bet you were wearing a mask that time, weren't you, Steve?
We had little radiation dosimeters with us, so we were doing that. And we didn't have any masks on, but when we got to the plant, we were greeted by guards that were in the full suits with the
you
masks
didn't
on.
So you went that close, you did not have the full suits? You had no protect. You didn't even have masks?
No.
Oh, man, that's nuts.
We were keeping track of the radiation readings.
Yeah? So, did they ever spike?
Well, later, I did have an incident during that time in Fukushima where it snowed and we had to get checked because there was quite a reading of radiation that ended up on the bottom of my boots.
Eesh.
And but I had covered nuclear testing and a very famous nuclear trial in Las Vegas, the Bainbury nuclear trial, early in my career. And I had heard a lot of testimony from both both sides, the plaintiffs and the defendants on this civil suit about radiation exposure. Two of the guards at the Nevada test site had died after a nuclear test vented, and their widows sued the United States government. And so that was sort of a mini education in radiation. So I was quite cognizant of the different kinds of radiation and what levels you need to be aware of. And I had a friend of mine, a fellow ham radio operator, was a physician up in Santa Barbara. And I called him and told him what was going on in the readings. And he said, don't worry about it. By the time you get cancer of the thyroid decades later, you'll be dead of something else.
Oh, so. Man. Man. Well, you joined us, I think it was in the middle of the night out where you were, or early in the morning where you were to report on Fukushima here on the show at the time. That's how we got to know you, of course. Now that you've told me all these stories, this is the first time I've met you in person. I thought, well, you were positively glowing, and maybe that would be part of it. Steve, I joked about which was more difficult, working in combat zones or working in the White House during the Donald Trump administration. You were there for all 4 years?
Yes.
Most of 4 years.
And I did 8 months of the Biden administration as well at the top.
Now, isn't that supposed to be a plum of a job, the White House correspondent?
Absolutely.
Yes. So why aren't you still there? What are you doing out here in Los Angeles?
Well, I would say, you know, you have to be crazy to turn down a White House assignment for 4 years. Mm-hmm. But to do it for 8 years or 10 years, you have to be crazy, too. So I gave it my all for those 4 years. I told my bosses about a year before the 2020 election, I didn't want this to be perceived politically in any way, that regardless of the election outcome, I would do another year on the White House beat, ideally, but I did not want to do another 4 years.
Why?
Because I, frankly, I felt a little burned out doing it. And I have always been one of these journalists who's been out in the field and going to different countries. And I like getting out and talking to regular people and doing feature stories. And the White House is a slog. We at Voice of America, we're part of the what's called the rotational pool. So you go into the Oval Office on some days, you travel with the president. And my job was not only to do my own reporting, but gather broadcast quality sound for all the other radio networks. And you just really have to be on top of your game all the time. Plus, as we all know, with Donald Trump as president, presidency to a great degree by Twitter, it started at 7 o'clock in the morning and sometimes ended at 11 at night. We worked weekends as well. And it takes a toll on your personal life and it can on your mental health as well.
So I'm guessing.
I knew when to get out.
So I joked about... which is more difficult, covering wars or covering the Trump White House?
Well, they have different degrees of difficulty, I would say. In a combat zone, of course, there are all sorts of risks. You know, terrible things can happen to you. But covering the White House, I would say, is very, very intensive just because of the number of hours that you put in. And the microscope that you're under. Everyone is watching very closely what you're reporting, how you're reporting it, and it's never, you don't have any downtime really when you're on the White House beat.
And in this case, it's not just the public watching you. It's not just other media outlets and so forth watching you. The Trump administration was watching you, were they not? I mean, I was reading stories about you, Steve Herman. I don't know what you're allowed to talk about now or not, but I was reading stories about you during the Trump administration. You know, you were showing up as the topic of news as Trump had moved a bunch of dudes into Voice of America to and they were not happy with your coverage, with other people's coverage. And they seemed to be preparing to restructure. This, how old is Voice of America now?
It goes back to 1942.
1942. So 80 years or so, this organization, I want to talk about its how it works, how its independence is supposed to be separate from the government. But you were under a lot of pressure from the Trump administration yourself at VOA, were you?
Yes, it was a little bit unique. I think a lot of reporters were targeted by President Trump and others in the administration, and that happens in other administrations as well. I mean, President
at VOA though?
No, with the mainstream media,
regular media,
and other media. What is unique about VOA is because we are part of the federal government. There is a unique relationship there. But we have a charter that puts in place a firewall between us and the senior executives, as well as any administration, the White House, or even the head of our parent agency, the U.S. Agency for Global Media, as it's known now, cannot tell me or my editors what we have to report or cannot report. They cannot be involved editorially. I like to say VOA is probably the only news organization in the world that's mandated by law to be fair and objective. And in that charter, it says we must reflect the different views of what's going on in the United States. And of course, we should mention we do not broadcast to the United States. Our audiences, there's 47 language services now, are overseas. It is a purely external service.
But Donald Trump tried, as I understand it, to disturb that that charter in some fashion, actually tried to put in political operatives to oversee.
Yes, the president appoints the head, the CEO now of what's called USAGM. It's evolved over the decades. We were under the U.S. Information Agency at one time, and then it was called the Broadcasting Board of Governors. So, yes, the president of the United States now appoints the head of that agency, but they are to respect the firewall between their offices. In other words, they're to be involved more in strategic things like figuring out which languages we should be broadcasting in, what should be the mix of radio, television, the internet, all those sort of things, but not to dictate what the VOA reporters are actually reporting, especially about government policy.
But were they trying to dictate what you could report when under
Well, what was happening is there was an attempt, and this is all very well documented in the public record. They were trying to change not only the leadership of VOA, but Michael Pack, who was appointed by the president, although he had gone before Congress and said he would respect the firewall, it was perceived by his words and actions once he was confirmed and in the job that he was trying to break through the firewall. And we had a federal judge basically throw him a legal brushback and say, back off.
So had anything like that ever happened to your knowledge at the Voice of America?
There were some before – this is well before my time, but there were tensions by a Reagan appointee named Charles Z. Wick. And there have been over the decades, and you can read histories of VOA books that document this by Alan Heil and Nicholas Cull and other people, where administrations or the State Department or the Defense Department was bent out of shape about something that VOA was reporting, and there was a backlash about it. So,
not unprecedented, but unusual for that kind of direct attempt to it seemed like intimidation from here, that they were – if you weren't going to be fired, if you weren't going to be told what to do, it was definitely – I would think you would have felt it coming down, the attempt.
It was a distraction is the way that I look at it. But I think also when these things have happened over the decades in various administrations, it also demonstrates that VOA is not a propaganda service. If we were a propaganda service, we wouldn't be getting complaints from within the United States government about some of the stories that we're doing.
Good point. And that's really what I wanted to sort of focus on a little bit here. You know, we've been having a bit of a debate on this program and right here inside our station at KPFK, our flagship station in Los Angeles, about our news coverage, our own news coverage, and other programming when it comes to what I and others see as the sort of the repetition of Russian state-run, you know, media propaganda, state-run and funded news outlets like RT and Sputnik when it comes to coverage of Russia's war on Ukraine, when it even the COVID pandemic. I've been critical, for example, of one of our show's hosts by someone who is actually employed by a Russian state-funded news outlet but fails to disclose that on her air. How is Voice of America then, because they're all U.S., in this case, U.S. funded, but they're all state-funded outlets, and, you know, I've cited your coverage on my program. How is that any different, really, than citing RT or Sputnik or, you know, TASS or a Russian agency like that?
Well, I think you've just pointed out how the Russian state media coverage has been of the war in Ukraine after Russia invaded.
Says me, but other people think, oh, you know, it's Voice of America who's got it wrong. It's AP who's got it wrong. NBC, CNN, MSNBC, and so forth.
Facts are facts, right?
Are they? I mean,
yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
And what they are reporting at RT and Sputnik is not factual. Especially about the war in Ukraine. Now, that's not to say there is not factual information that they put out, maybe about the World Cup scores and, you know, a natural disaster and things like that. And it's not just Russia. This is a situation that we see from Chinese state media and Iranian state media. And this goes back all the way to why VOA was created after the start of World War II, because you had Nazi Germany on the airwaves and uncontested to a great degree, spitting out anti-American and pro-Nazi propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And what VOA was set up to do was to tell the audiences, initially in German and Japanese, we will tell you what's going on with the war, whether it's good or bad. And so we were able to build up credibility quickly because people understood, oh, they're talking about setbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And while everything we're hearing out of Nazi Germany radio or Radio Tokyo at mm-hmm. that time would only report German or Japanese victories. And this is what I've heard from when I went to North Korea, for example, that there were North Koreans I spoke with there who acknowledge listening to VOA. And we know from talking to defectors who are able to be more frank than people who are in North Korea
mm-hmm.
that at first they were very skeptical, suspicious of what VOA and Radio Free Asia were reporting. But after listening to it for a period of time, they compared it to what they were hearing about their own country,
mm-hmm.
what they were experiencing with their own eyes from what they were hearing from their state broadcasting.
And do they hear the VOA broadcast? Do they hear VOA being critical of the U.S.,
yes,
of
they
the
do.
U.S. government?
Yeah. Well, they hear us talking about problems that exist in our society.
In the U.S.
And debates about whether it's Black Lives Matter or the abortion issue. We are having interviews with people who are on different sides of those particular issues because
mm-hmm.
We ensure that if we're interviewing Democrats in Congress, we're also going to be interviewing Republicans in Congress. During the Trump administration, I was reporting on what President Trump was saying, but I was also reporting on what his critics were saying about his policy. So that is novel in many parts of the world, believe it or not.
No, I do believe it. And it makes me wonder because of that charter that is, you say, by law, right? By statute in the creation of
this. It's something that evolved over the years because we started out, as a wartime institution.
Does that unique mission then, again, mandated by statute, does that make the news at Voice of America actually more reliable than, say, corporate media outlets who are, gunning for ratings and so forth?
Well, that's the difference. What if I'm working for a commercial outlet, I have to have one eye on the ratings. That's, as you well know, and I'm sure you've discussed on your show many times, the pros and cons of commercial media, mainstream media.
I've had a thing or two to say about it throughout the years, yeah.
So for people that are skeptical,
yeah.
I say go to voanews.com,
mm-hmm.
look at the stories. You can watch the TV reports. There's radio programs on there as well. And then you can decide. I frequently would get some criticism on social media. People sometimes from the same story on both the left and the right would claim that, we were being biased. And I would say, okay, what was biased or what was inaccurate? Please point it out. And then I don't hear again from
People. Yeah, I think I hear from those people as well.
Right. And that's great. I mean, what I say is we do not target Americans.
Mm-hmm.
We do not broadcast to the United States. But the American people are our stakeholders.
Mm.
They're paying for this service.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do have a right to make comments if they feel that something that we are broadcasting is inaccurate or skewed one way or the other, let our bosses know about it. They'll be happy to hear from you. And I can tell you our public relations department does respond.
Our phone number here is 818-985-KPFK, 818-985-5735. If you have any thoughts, concerns, questions, I know those headphones are like making a lot of noise.
That's why you took them off.
Sorry about that. I know. You could try one of those other pairs. Nothing works around here. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. If you have any questions for my guest today, Steve Herman, longtime correspondent at Voice of America. Steve, I also want to talk to you a little bit about what happened over the weekend with this Twitter nonsense and Donald Trump calling for the termination somehow of the Constitution, since you're now on the 2024 beat, whether we like it or not. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back with some more thoughts on that and maybe some of your calls. 818-985-5735 here with Steve Herman of Voice of America. I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast. We'll be back soon. Yeah! Welcome back. It's The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com here with my in-studio guest, Steve Herman, until very recently the White House correspondent for Voice of America. Now he is their chief national correspondent out and about, already for some reason covering the 2024 campaign. By the way, what are you doing here? We're going to get to some of your calls in a second. 818-985-5735. Why are you in Los Angeles? Has the 2024 campaign started here in LA yet?
No.
Thank you. Good.
As far as I know. But I did have a couple of invitations to speak to some students at the USC School of Public Diplomacy and also one of my former colleagues from the Associated Press, Terrell Jones, is a professor out at Claremont McKenna College. So I went out there to speak to a class as well. Isn't I love doing things like that.
Isn't that the Claremont Institute? Is that involved?
No.
Whole different thing?
I don't think there's a connection. Claremont McKenna is part of the Pomona Colleges, and there's, what is it, Harvey Mudd, and there's like six schools.
Because that Claremont Institute was the whole John Easton, these rogue Trump attorneys who was right-wing group. Okay, so it's not them. You're not mixing up with those people.
I'm not mixing it up with those folks.
You'll catch hell for mixing it up with me.
And then also, you know, I'm a big, because of my time in Japan, I'm a big sushi fan. And I hope people here in Southern California appreciate this.
Yeah.
You probably, outside of Japan, have the best sushi.
Really?
For the best price. You can get the same quality sushi in Manhattan, New York City, but you'll probably pay about triple the price.
Really?
I'm not exaggerating.
Okay, because I know we have great sushi here. I didn't know how lucky we were that it was so much cheaper and better than everyone else. Good to know. You want to take a quick call?
Sure.
I have no idea what this call is about, but it is from Karen in Oakland. Hey, Karen, welcome to the Bradcast.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hello, Mr. Herman. I remember you from way back at CBS News.
That's yes.
And I was listening to VOA back in the Mary Bitterman and Tucker Carlson's dad days.
That's right.
Now, Tucker Carlson's dad, he wasn't at VOA, was he?
He ran VOA, Richard Carlson.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Isn't that interesting? Okay. Yes. Press on, Karen.
You can invite Richard Carlson to be on your show.
Will he show up? Will he take that invitation? All right.
Sorry, we interrupted Karen.
Go ahead, Karen.
Well, anyway, I've been a long-time shortwave radio listener, but I lost interest a few years ago because, one, I was getting harder and harder to pick up stations due to increased QRM or man-made interference. And secondly, many stations disappeared because they moved to the Internet to better serve their listeners. Unfortunately, the Internet, as we've seen recently, can be hacked in or shut down by various governments, mm-hmm. whether it's in Iran or China or Russia. I'd like to know if international radio over shortwave is still viable these days, and is VOA a part of that? Thank you.
And Steve, we actually covered this as an issue right after the beginning of the Ukraine war. Let me let you respond to Karen there.
Yes, it's an excellent question, Karen. And I think what we have seen lately in Ukraine, mm-hmm. where, as we've discussed previously, or you discussed previously on this program, when electricity and television and the internet are knocked out, radio is that last line to maintain an information flow into a particular area. VOA just the other day was knocked off of FM and AM radio in Afghanistan by the Taliban. Mm. So what is the backup? Perhaps it will be shortwave radio again. VOA, through USAGM, does maintain a shortwave radio capability. We still broadcast in some languages to some countries. Most notably would be North Korea. Mm-hmm. There's medium wave and shortwave broadcasts by VOA into North Korea because obviously people are not allowed to access the internet and most people don't have satellite TV dishes in North Korea. And the North Korean government is not going to let us have an FM affiliate in Pyongyang.
But
for some reason.
I don't know why. But when in Russia, at the end of February, when Russia attacked Ukraine, we learned that VOA actually stopped their shortwave program into Europe, if I am remembering it correctly. At sort of at the end of the Cold War, they stopped the shortwave?
It was sometime after that, but it had been severely cut back because the emphasis was on reaching a larger audience through television or the internet.
Yeah, or the internet. And there was a big concern. I talked to you at the time and some of your former VOA colleagues had sort of put together an effort to try to get – it was called Shortwaves for Freedom. It was the name of the effort. And I sort of lost touch with how that went, but I know they were paying. They were trying to sort of rebuild shortwave because there was a concern that people would not be able to get the internet with Russia and their assault. Now, the Russian assault sort of got pushed back. So I don't know if the effort, there was thoughts that Kyiv was going to be falling at that point. So I don't know if that Shortwaves for Freedom effort continued. Do you know, did it continue? Are shortwave programming being sent in to Ukraine?
It was for a period of time based on that crowdfunding effort.
Right.
And I believe it may still be broadcast from a private shortwave station in Okeechobee, Florida.
Right.
That is picking up the broadcasts on the internet and then relaying them.
Was there conversation inside of VOA at the time that, hey, maybe we ought to restart our shortwave into Europe?
That's above my pay grade.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
But I'm a ham radio guy. And like Karen, I've always enjoyed listening to shortwave radio. And I do believe it has still, in these emergency situations, a utility when all else fails, when you can't. We have FM affiliates in many countries, for example. We have AM stations in Africa and in Asia. And when those sorts of facilities are not available, then shortwave is something that can and should be considered.
Does Voice of America right now... And can you speak to other, you know, I had mentioned in the previous segment, RT, Sputnik, and so forth. Does Voice of America directly take on those media outlets to point out that this is not true, that is not true? How does that work?
What VOA has is a service, a component, which is called Polygraph. And it has a website, polygraph.com. .info, polygraph.info. And it directly counters the disinformation coming from the Russian, the Chinese, the Iranian media, and also the officials. So if you look at that website, you will see how VOA is directly countering the disinformation.
And I mentioned, because of your special charter at VOA, that in some an argument at least could be made that, as opposed to commercial corporate broadcasts, you guys may have even more of a reason to simply tell the truth rather than get ratings, appeal to various political sides, and so forth. I think Morris from Long Beach has a thought that may relate to that. Let me go to Morris. Hey, Morris, welcome to the broadcast, my friend. How are you, Mo? Oh, Mo, he took a break. I never go to him until the end of the show. So we'll go back to him. Try to keep him on hold there, if I can figure out how these phones work after all these years. Somebody put him on hold, and go. Somebody make sure Mo's okay. Steve Herman, I mentioned at the top of the show, Donald Trump calling for the termination of the Constitution. Now that you're on the 2024 beat, I think you can discuss this. I don't even know what to make of this. Did you read this Matt Taibbi thread on Twitter?
Yes.
Did you find the First Amendment violations that apparently Donald Trump and Elon Musk were so freaked out about, that Donald Trump wants to shut down the Constitution?
Well, one takeaway that I had from all of that is there were what appeared to be sincere discussions and consultations within Twitter for takedown requests that were not only coming from the Democrats, but also from the Trump administration as well. I don't think it's been revealed yet what were the specific concerns that the Trump administration had about particular tweets, but
interesting that he did bother to – he referenced it. Taibbi referenced it. Oh, they both did, the White House and the Biden administration. But he didn't talk about the specific concerns that the Trump administration
I think what has happened after this came out, the so-called Twitter files, is it's been weaponized and politicized. So if you're on the on the right, you're taking away certain things from it, because that's what you're hearing from that particular aspect of the media. And then vice versa on the left as well.
Except if you actually read the material, nothing they're claiming on the right was actually there. There were no demands from the government. That would be the only thing that would be a First Amendment issue, is if the government demanded you shut this or that down. He didn't detail any of that. And at the time, of course, the government was Donald Trump.
My takeaway on this is, if you're going to run a social media platform, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or TikTok, you're going to have problems like this, right? And that's why these companies have been bedeviled to some degree by this whole monitoring of it, and have armies of people that are supposed to consider all these cases. I'm sure you have, as other people have, filed when you've seen something maybe directed at you that's you felt went beyond the pale, whether it was a death threat or something like that. And there were human beings that were tasked to take care of these things or to respond to them, or they work off an algorithm. But this is a problem, I feel, is never going to be solved. You're never going to be able to make everybody happy. Because unless you are severely restricting the platform and having a human moderator, you may have been back. I remember back in the day, I was on groups on what was it called, like Usenet and things like
Usenet, yes.
Where they were moderated. Before your post could go out to everybody else, the administrator
would approve it
of
first.
That would approve it first. And then there were others that were totally open. And, you know, we have wonderful free-spirited things happening on Reddit and other places like that. So and this is the big debate right now. What should Twitter be? And, you know, Elon Musk has a certain idea, and some of the other users have different ideas.
Of course. And as long as all of these ideas are just in you know, in touch with reality, then that's okay. I don't mind if they disagree with me politically or anything else. It's when we start this imaginary, that rant I read from Donald Trump at the top, which is imaginary, you know, claiming that there's all this evidence of fraud in 2020 that was exposed in this thing.
Well, no. there's a real world backlash to that now, because we have John Bolton today saying unless Republicans who are planning to run for president repudiate that, his statement about the Constitution, then he's going to jump in. So that's why election 2024 is already underway.
Well, and I'm sure Donald Trump is worried about John Bolton beating him in the 2024 campaign. Let me go. Do I have time for one more? Our phones sort of crashed there, but I think we got him back. Amir, in Woodland Hills, welcome to the broadcast, Amir. Do you have a question for Steve Herman?
Thank you so much. Yes. Back in 1977, 1978, I remember listening to Voice of America through shortwave radio. And at the time, there was no social networking, none of these social medias, no internet. But VOA was the broadcast that was broadcasting Khomeini's speeches in Iran. Mm. And also, it was directing the where the protests are going to occur. And so I think it had a very big part in what the revolution in Iran took place. And I do not think that VOA is impartial, because also I've talked to people who came from Chile, and they also say the same thing, because VOA apparently in an indirect way also supported Pinochet.
Mike, I've only got a minute here, so let me get Steve's response, because I'm going to run out of the clock here.
Well, there have been complaints over the decades from both sides of the political spectrum in various countries. And I can't really address something that happened in 1977. I wasn't working for the Persian service. I was in high school at the time. but if these are concerns, I can tell you are happening now, are happening in real time, that listeners who do speak Farsi or Spanish should contact the VOA to express their opinion and about why they feel that particular VOA broadcaster program is not being fair and balanced.
Thanks for that call, Amir. I appreciate it. Can I fit in? If he's really fat? Yeah, Mike in L.A. Hey, Mike, welcome to the broadcast. A thought for me and or Steve Herman today.
Yes. Does anyone know who it was that informed Donald Trump of the existence of the U.S. Constitution?
Somebody must have tipped him off. It's the first time I've heard him mention it. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the call. Steve, always great having you on the show. Even greater having you here in person in studio. I'm mightily honored by that. Thank you, sir.
Love to do it again one of these days.
Thank you. I hope we can. Steve Herman is, of course, now the chief national correspondent for the Voice of America. He had until recently been the White House bureau chief. You can find him on the Twitters, as long as they're still up, at W7V. VOA. Never got to ask why that, but next time I'll ask you that Twitter handle. W7VOA and VOAnews.com. That's it. I got to get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyne, to my board operator, Yout Orozco, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.